Chairperson, we will do so. We will start on page 10 of the document that was handed out. And there we looked at the functions of the classification review panel, and more specifically in respect of the subclause 3 of that particular clause. That relates to the administrative work to be performed by the classification review panel and the officials to be performing that work. So we suggested a clause, subclause 3, 4, and 5 there, that will read, the administrative work connected with the performance of the functions of the classification review panel must be performed by officials, and then an appointment function to the chairperson we thought might be considered. The remuneration allowances, benefits, and other terms and conditions of employment of such staff must be determined in terms of the Public Service Act, and then also the security vetting in clause. Subclause 5, a person may not be appointed under subsection 3 unless that person has a valid security clearance certificate issued under the National Strategic Intelligence Act. Or we propose a separate standalone clause wherein you deal with the appointment of staff for the classification review panel, and that's contained in the new clause on page 11, appointment of staff, and it also just deals with the clause that I've just read to the committee.
Already, I don't know. I see they're scratching in their bags there. I'm not sure. concerned that the clause that we had in our draft that we received yesterday about the remuneration, there was a consideration for consultation with the Minister of Finance as to the budgetary implications. And I'm just concerned that these determinations will be made without consultation to the Minister of Finance, because there are budgetary considerations, and I think we need to put that in as well.
I'm sure you're going to find it later on in the document. Honourable, sorry, Ms. Boyce.
Chairperson, that is indeed correct. We do look at a bit later on where we dealt with the remuneration of the chair of the classification review panel, so it is dealt with there as well. So this was just a proposal for the committee to consider on the way in which to appoint the staff as requested yesterday.
Smart.
Quite so, Chair. And just to indicate, the second one looks preferable simply because it refers to staff as opposed to officials. And then secondly, the only question then is, do we really want the chairperson alone to be appointing, or do we want the panel to appoint their chief executive officer, for example? If you consider them the equivalent of a board, no, the equivalent of, call them whatever you like. Usually, if your panel is the equivalent of a board, they would appoint their whoever. But Llewellyn, you mustn't be frightened by words like chief executive officer. This is their staff and the person who does the main executive functions.
Honourable members, can I intervene in this conversation? Can we get the presentation in its complete form? Because I suspect that you're going to be complaining about things that aren't here that you will find later on. So let's make the presentation. It's finished. Honourable Jeffries.
I think it's something with regarding the existing section, but there's one difference between sub-clause 4 on the first provision and sub-clause 2 on the second provision. 4 is remuneration, allowances, benefits must be determined in terms of the Public Service Act. And the second one is taking into account. I'm not sure what taking into account means. I don't know why. I would have thought four is the four on the first one is preferable to the two on the second one.
Honourable members, I think that point is well made. There seems to be no disagreement with that, but I would still urge, let's take the full presentation on the panel. Otherwise, you run the risk of raising issues here that are perhaps covered later on in the document. Can we proceed, Ms. Boyce?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in the Constitution and Appointment of Classification Review Panel, we've considered this and we just would ask the committee's indulgence because we just want to clarify an issue on the joint rules. We've looked at the joint rules of Parliament and we also had a discussion with the Parliamentary State Law Advisors, Mr. Vagnara, and we would like to also consult with him further on the aspect. So if we could come back to this, we would appreciate it if we can get the opportunity to address the committee on the particular clause. That's sub-clause 2 that relates to the preparation of the list and the recommendation that was changed to approval by the National Assembly. The committee indicated that it should be only the National Assembly and not the two houses, so we just wanted to confirm something with the Parliamentary Law Advisors and we'd ask the indulgence of the committee on that.
Honourable Landers.
Chairperson, we keep, somebody is insisting on inserting stuff here that we've not agreed to. And I really must take exception, Chairperson, and it has to stop. If we agree to something, then it must go in. If we have not agreed, you can't just put it in here and say, well, let's see what happens. Klip in die bos sort of thing. prepare a list of nominees with three more members than the number of appointees. Where the hell did that come from?
Where are you reading on the
web? Page 12, Chairperson, sub 2.
Paragraph B, we took out the words permanently. Paragraph C, we took out the words a public servant or the holder of any other enumerated position under the state, and we inserted, as in accordance with the constitution provision, appointed by or is in the service of the state and receive a remuneration for the appointment of service. Paragraph G has been declared, and we took out the words by court to be mentally ill or disordered, and we put in the words to be of unsound mind by a court of the Republic as in accordance with the constitutional provision. And then also similarly with H, we were asked to also consider several options on the formulation for that particular provision. The formulation in the first one comes from the constitution. We inserted the words prior to 27 April 1994, convicted of an offence and sentenced to more than 12 months imprisonment without the option of a fine, either in the Republic or outside the Republic, if the conduct constituting the offence would have been an offence in the Republic. And then we propose that we delete, but no one may be regarded as having been sentenced until an appeal against the conviction or sentence has been determined, or until the time for an appeal has expired, because we thought that that should not be any more applicable, seeing the time frames. Second option would be option one, that's at the bottom of page 13, that reads, the member has been convicted of an offence in the Republic or elsewhere and was sentenced to imprisonment without the option of a fine other than an offence committed prior to 27 April 1994 associated with a political objective for which amnesty was granted by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, or option 2 at the top of page 14, that comes from the Architectural Professions Act, has been convicted of an offence in the Republic other than an offence committed prior to 27 April 1994 associated with political objectives and was sentenced to imprisonment without the option of a fine. and then I remains as is in the current draft.
After the first two options don't work.
We'll deal with that when we get the full presentation. Proceed, Ms. White.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 14, we were asked also to have a look at the removal or vacation of office for members, and we proposed that we took out the words vacation in the heading and insert removal. As can be seen from the formulation that we have here, that the word remove is used, so we proposed that change. And then we will have a new subclause 1, a member may be removed from the panel on the grounds of misconduct, incapacity, or incompetence. A finding to that effect by the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, and see the adoption by the Assembly of a resolution calling for that member's removal. The National Assembly adopted the resolution calling for that member's removal as a member from the Classification Review Panel. Subclause 2, a resolution of the National Assembly concerning the removal of a member from the Classification Review Panel must be adopted with the supporting vote of the majority of the members of the Assembly. Subclause 3, that's the appointment of the minister's suspension for 4 members of the panel. The minister may suspend a member from the Classification Review Panel at any time after the start of the proceedings of the Committee of the National Assembly for the removal of that person, and B, must remove a person from office upon the adoption by the Assembly of the resolution calling for that person's removal. And then 4 is to bring in line the resignation and the other 2 issues of removal. A member ceases to be a member of the Classification Review Panel if that member A resigns, the old C becomes then B, fails to attend 3 consecutive meetings of the Classification Review Panel unless his or her apology has been accepted, or the old D becomes C, becomes disqualified in terms of section, and then we need to just determine what section it is, because it's the section that deals with the disqualification of members. At the moment, it's not numbered, so that's why it's got an XXX. Then on page 15, the remuneration of members. Members of the Classification Review Panel and staff of the Classification Review Panel must be paid such remuneration and allowances as determined by the minister. With the, and we propose here a deletion of the word approval and rather to use the word concurrence of the Minister of Finance. And then at the bottom, page 15, the meetings of the Classification Review Panel. The proposal in 1 is captured. The Classification Review Panel meets as often as the circumstances require, but must meet at least, take out the words 4 times a year and substitute once a month at such times and places as the chairperson may determine. And then subclause 4 was taken out and simplified by saying any decision taken by the Classification Review Panel is valid if the required quorum is present at that meeting. Then 16, decisions of the Classification Review Panel, sub 1. The Classification Review Panel may confirm, vary, or set aside any classification decision taken by the head of the organ of state and instruct the head of the organ of state concerned to change the classification status of the classified information if necessary. And then there was just a removing, the substitution of clauses 2, 3, and 4 to make it change it around. So that is why you will see that the 2 is in bold. In 3, that's now the new 2, the Classification Review Panel must, before reaching a final decision, afford the head of an organ of state an opportunity to respond. Sorry, Chairperson, may I just address you on that? Where the 2 and the 3 was changed, we would wanted to take instructions from the committee on that. We weren't sure if the 2 and the 3, and the 3 then remains as is. That is now the old bolded 2. Because we have it bracketed here as 2, but we need to know whether we must follow up after the new 3 with the old 2. So it will read then, the Classification Review Panel must, before reaching a final decision, afford the head of organ of state an opportunity to respond in connection therewith in any matter that may be expedient under the circumstances. And then the old 2 should follow here, or we need to just get an instruction from the committee on that particular aspect. And then a decision of the Classification Review Panel binds an organ of state subject to any appeal that organ of state may lodge with with a competent high court. Then on the reporting, page 16, subclause 2, the classification review panel must submit the report contemplated in subsection 1. And then we took out the words to the minister not later than 5 months after the end of financial year in question. We took out subclause 3, that annual report must be prepared in a form and contained information determined by the minister. And we took out part of subclause 4, the minister must table the annual report contemplated in subsection 1. And then it will read, the classification review panel must submit the report contemplated in sub 1 to Parliament within 30 days of receipt thereof if Parliament is in session, or if Parliament is not in session within 14 days after the commencement of the next parliamentary session. Subclause 3 was the old 5. The classification review panel must, through the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, submit any other report that Parliament may require. An old subclause 6 becomes 4. The chairperson of the classification review panel must publish any annual report of the classification review panel. And then the transitional arrangement in this instance on page 17 refers to clause 22, chairperson. I don't know whether we need to deal with that now, or we can we finish the presentation on the classification review panel.
We'll get back to that. You'll just remind us when we deal with 17. We'll get back to that isolated clause on page 17. So when we deal with clause 17, we will get back to page 17 to deal with that isolated transitional arrangement clause, because it doesn't pertain to the classification panel. Honourable members, are those alterations in conjunction with your instructions last night? Yes. So we'll start at the beginning now. Honourable members would have then observed where there's been a deviation from the instruction, or where the instruction has not been accurately captured, or where you prefer proposing something in the alternative. I'd like to remind you too that we went through this thing clause by clause, paragraph by paragraph, and we actually ticked off where we, and you were very quick to agree to many things last night. I would hate to open up the debate on matters which we had agreed on last night. I'm not going to entertain, unless you've got a two-thirds majority, I am not going to entertain. I said it. If you want dark bottles, get dark glasses in there. Honourable members, we have had that problem before, where members come late and then debate that has been fully considered for hours gets reopened, and I have to take the criticism during the breaks. Why I allow these things to happen? So we went through this thing with your instruction, and we agreed on certain things, and we agreed that other things should be changed. Now, please, let us not start looking at things that we agreed on that they should now be changed again. Let's look at those things that we said must be changed. Can we do that first? So let's go to the beginning of it.
I think let's do those first, and then meaning later we'll come to those that you did not agree on.
What we're going to do now is go through the review panel. There are things on the review panel which we had agreed on last night, and I'm saying I'm not going to go through that again. We are going to deal only with the things that we had agreed that the state law advisor must go and change, and see whether it's been changed according to what we had said. Otherwise we'll never get past this thing. So can you just make reference to the page and the clause you're talking to, so that we don't have to fumble? But we're starting on page 10. We're going to get back to 10. We're going to get back to those other things. This is the first presentation. Yes, Honourable Mayor.
My apologies. On page 10, at the top of the page, sub-clause 2, the clause dealing with access. I raised the question last night whether that clause would give sufficient access to the classification review panel. It seemed to me that the wording that organs of state must provide the classification review panel with such assistance as may reasonably be required was possibly needed to be strengthened. I proposed that we look at the wording in the legislation dealing with the Inspector General for Intelligence. My understanding is that the Inspector General for Intelligence has complete access to material in the possession of the security services, and that access cannot be denied. There seemed last night to be some agreement on this, and that has not been captured in the document. I wonder if we could just consider this, and if there is agreement, implement those changes in a subsequent draft.
Honourable members, I don't recall that as being part of what we had. This is a new debate, am I correct? Was that? So I did not mark it in my documents then. You missed it, could see. Is there a response, honourable members?
But in principle, it agreed, and all that has to be done is for the appropriate drafting to be done to provide for that.
Honourable members, right on top of on page 10, there's a proposal that this thing be harmonised with the provisions of the Oversight Act relating to the Inspector General of Intelligence. Yes, Honourable Jeff.
Chair, I'm actually not sure what the purpose of that sub 2 is and what it does. I mean, it's quite a vague clause. What happens if they don't, that kind of thing. I don't know if you can compare it to the functions of the Inspector General of Intelligence, because those are broader. I mean, the functions of the review panel are listed later on under, you know, all these clauses are XX, but may I then say the first XX. It must do those things, and must do them. So I'm not really sure the purpose of this sort of fairly, I hear what Mr. Maney is saying, but even two as it stands at the moment is I would have thought unnecessary. It's fairly vague and unnecessary. You can try and tighten it, but the bottom line is it's inherent under the functions that the review panel must perform those functions. And therefore, it basically, I'm worried in a sense too, ends up limiting what it should be doing. By saying that organs of state must provide such assistance as may reasonably be required. The review panel must do its job and give and organs of state classify must basically submit as required the documentation for review, and that's it. So my fear basically is that two as it stands at the moment is I would see it as limiting the work of the panel, and I don't know if supposedly tightening two would actually make any difference.
The Honourable Smuts, the Honourable Mania, and then the Honourable Abrasini.
can I proceed, Chair? I mean, I think if you look at the functions of the committee, I mean, of the panel, I mean, the panel will be required in terms of XX1 to conduct reviews, but also in terms of XXD to do random sampling. In order to do that, the panel will need access to documents in the possession of the security services. The assumption being here that the security services may be resistant to providing that documentation for whatever reason. And so my thinking is that on page 10, subclause 2, there should be a provision which stipulates that the classification review panel must be provided with the documentation, for example, that it requires. So it would seem to me that XX2 is not only necessary but needs to be strengthened. My suggestion for strengthening that subclause was the kind of wording used in the legislation making provision for the Inspector General for Intelligence. That might not be the best wording, but I do think that XX2 is necessary and ought to be strengthened.
Honourable Embassy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I always wonder how John gets privileges that none of us can be afforded to, and I admire him for that, because it's bringing us back. But I think it's there might be... No, exactly. Whenever I do it, everyone jumps on me. But John's point is an organ of state is given a function. By virtue of having that function, it flows automatically that all organ states must help it to assist in the exercise of that function. That's in a nutshell is what he's saying. Therefore, this is pleonastic. And yes and no, or yes up to a point. And ordinarily, the point to which that is comes up to is when the request of assistance has any budgetary implication, requires any action on the side of the requested organ, then you need to have enabling legislation. There must be enabling legislation to create an actual obligation on the side of the requested organ. Otherwise, the bureaucratic response can be, we don't have the resources, we don't have the time, the photocopy machine doesn't work. That's ordinarily. In this specific type of environment, there is a less measure of institutional culture of cooperating with other organs of state. It's less the culture is less conducive to the fact of somebody picking up the telephone and asking for information, and then the recipient of the phone call running around to help the guy in the next department. So both legally and from a point of view of creating the right institutional relations and breaking a silos culture which may be present, I think that this provision is strengthened by the suggestion that David was putting forward is indeed very necessary.
No, Honourable Landers first.
Jameson, I will try to put this very simply. The panel wants to review the classification and declassification of documents in the hands of Defence Intelligence. It informs Defence Intelligence that it wishes to do so in terms of this law. And Defence Intelligence says to them, okay, you're welcome. And they arrive at Defence Intelligence headquarters. They're stopped at the gate and told you may not enter. Give you a very simple example. Now, in terms of 2, what does that mean? Or as such assistance as may be reasonably required. They've been stopped at the gate. All right. After a long wrangle, they're very reluctantly admitted. Now, someone pointed out yesterday that a lot of this stuff is on digital. Much of it is not in
that is in hard copy. Well, it's not sarcasm. I'm telling the truth. It's fact. This is where two fails. And defense intelligence brings them a file of documents this size and says, there you go. Now, the panel says, surely that's not all of it. And defense intelligence says, yes. And then in addition to that, Jefferson, the panel, mindful of Mr. Ambrosini's experiences, says, fine, okay, we look at those, but in the meantime, we want our CEO to look at your computer files, records on computer. And they give him access to computer, but he can't get through. You see, Chair, these are all some of the practical and logistical difficulties the panel, we don't want the panel to face. And for that reason, what is in two doesn't quite cut it and may need strengthening to ensure that when the panel wants to do what it is set down to do under the functions, it is allowed to do so.
The Honourable Swat and then the Honourable Smut.
The offence provisions that we've got in terms of adding, we can fix two, but we can also make it an offence where an official does not cooperate as a deterrent. There's an additional possible argument that this panel is an organ of state, and then Section 41 applies of the Constitution, which requires cooperation. It sets up mechanisms, dispute resolutions as well. But I do foresee that difficulty of access and being difficult. How is the panel going to resolve that? So I tend to agree one needs to strengthen that. But one also needs to add in an offence provision where an official consciously does not cooperate. And I think we need to look at that as well to buttress our offence provisions. We've got 42 that speaks about improper classification for nebulous reasons. And what the panel is trying to ascertain is whether that document is correctly classified, and one can possibly add to that.
Honourable Smuts.
Yes, what we need to capture is the concepts of full access and that they must not obstruct. And I see absolutely no harm in creating an offence to make sure that they do not obstruct. But we should suspend decisions on that until we have the text of the IDI, which has been proposed by Mr. Mania. It's obviously the model that one wants to look at. But those are surely the concepts. They must give full access, and they must not obstruct. And do not forget that the main function, to the Honourable Jeffrey, we've taken out, unfortunately, some of the wording in here, which we as opposition had included. But the job of the review panel, when it reviews, is to test for compliance with the classification criteria that we have built into this bill. Our classification criteria are good, and we are also just about finishing a clause on conditions for classification. That's what this outfit, the review panel, is testing for on the basis of random sampling. They're not just checking whether people are doing a review every so often or every 10 years. And for the rest, I think that the Honourable Landers has set it out as perfectly as one possibly can. And Justice Steve, I don't think your cooperative governance is applicable. It's not going to help anyway. And all organs of state are not subject to cooperative. For example, the Chapter 9s are not. Yeah.
Honourable Van Wyk.
Jefferson, I just want to request that maybe the state law advisors also look first at what if there is a clause. I'm not sure. I'm not can't remember. And the Auditor General's legislation that we might also be able to use. If we don't necessarily want to go the full route of the IGI, let's just see what is in the Auditor General's legislation as well.
if you're going to create an offence on the members, you're surely going to have to reduce organ of state to the head of the organ of state. You're not going to charge the organ of state, are you? So perhaps non-cooperation or frustration. You're going to have to put that obligation on the head of the organ of state. I see the Honourable Swart and then the Honourable Abrasini.
Chair, one can maybe get guidance from Section 90 of PIA, which creates the offence where a person with intent to deny a right of access in terms of that act destroys, damages, alters the record, conceals the record, falsifies the record, commits an offence, and here it's liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years, and it's referred to a person with intent to deny access. So that's a possibility one can look at, Section 90.
Honourable Abrasini, then the Honourable Fichler, then the Honourable Landers.
You see, first of all, I'm quite satisfied by the language we have before us. You know, I'll look at any possibility of strengthening, but I mean, by itself, I think it does what it is supposed to be doing. Secondly, to complement what the Honourable Landers was saying, it is not just the technicalities of going through the documents. At times the work of the panel in reviewing classification will require understanding context. We need to be aware of the fact that one of the criteria is to make sure that classification is not made for purposes of hiding malfeasance, corruption, etc. And that won't be on the face of the document. They may ask people to do some investigation on their behalf. So the power must be there to ask the police and say, we want to know what is really happening in that company. Is it really a front for this purpose, or it is a front for another purpose? I mean, with fronting companies, the possibility of corruptions are very high. So, and if it needs to be strengthened, that needs to be taken into account. Three, on the offense, I beg to differ with you, Mr. Chairman, and I always do that a great pain, but the... No, I think one can have a disconnect between the offense and the section. The section creates the obligation. Then the offense can be, and we can keep it as it is without getting the obligation in the head of GAV and the head of the department, because then the person at the front gate says, well, no, I need to ask my director general before I leave you in. I let you in. And everything goes always through the director generals, and the director generals need to approve the issuance of cell phones in South Africa. But the drafting of the offense could merely say any official, any public servant who has been legitimately requested to provide assistance to the classification review board and fails to do so with the intent to prevent the board from performing its function, commits an offense. So that's detached, and in itself, the offense almost creates an additional obligation, which becomes a way of reinforcing it. So we leave this as it is, and we deal with the offense, saying whoever fails to help, in plain language, with intention of preventing, commits an offense.
The Honourable Fichler and then the Honourable London.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Now, firstly, this panel we are creating an instrument that must have teeth. If it has no teeth, then it is useless. Now, here it appears when we say panel such assistance as may be reasonable required. It means it has to request, to make a request. Why not say, for instance, assistance that may be legally required, so that whoever is reluctant to give the information must be aware that he is breaking the law. And therefore, this person has got powers to enforce the law.
I'm not saying we shouldn't provide for an offense. I think that's okay. My difficulty lies in the fact that when we come to an obstacle like this, we rush to create an offense. I would much rather that we fix what is here. I don't agree with Mr. Ambrosini when he says what is here is fine, and then the offense fixes any denial of access. I think we must fix what is here and ensure that access is not denied, and then in the unlikely event that that access is denied, then we find an offense for it.
Honourable members, this is a very simple situation you're faced with here. I'm amazed that this debate is taking so long. The Honourable Jeffries has said, look, does this capture what you want the law to look like? If it doesn't, then fix it. What is it that we want here? You want the panel not to be interfered with. Then is it, why don't we just find the right words then, if that's what we want? Yes. It takes so long to say that. Honorable Ambrosini, if I understood you earlier, and you had lots of complaints about the words, and now you think the words are okay again. Earlier on, you seemed not to be in agreement with the words, and now you say the words are okay. Let's add an offense. It's confusing the discussion. Honorable members, what do you want? You want the panel to have full access and nobody must interfere with them. Is that what you want?
Sorry, Chairman.
You don't agree with that.
Well, do I the word?
Because everybody else seems to agree that that is what
yes,
intended.
Yes, I agree with that, but not limited to that. This goes beyond access to information. It is about the possibility of enlisting the cooperation of other organs of state to do the work. Let me give you real life possible examples. In the intelligence, there is need of setting up companies to do things. Now, these companies could be used for corruption by those involved. So there is a legitimate purpose on which an additional purpose is in the classification will cover the corruption. The review panel may ask the Auditor General to conduct a special forensic investigation. Now, there is enlisting the cooperation. It's not just asking access to operation. It's not just asking access to information. It's taking all the information and it's dumping them on somebody else's table and says, please do the work for me. Tell me what's going on here. So it's requesting any reasonable assistance required from any organs of state.
Honourable Member, I am confused, but allow me to address you on the covert structures of another matter, totally different matter. Yes, but it's another matter. It's dealt with, the AG deals with it, the Inspector General deals with that, and it's not something everybody can just go look at. And there's a reason for that. Honourable Gabadelli?
You covered me because it's coming with another topic altogether. I thought you have actually phrased it for us when you said yes. And then this is another topic now that is coming. If we are to be allowed to contribute on this new topic, let's set aside time for it.
Shall we ask then the state law advisor just to revise this thing in alignment with what the simple little principle that I've set out just before the Honourable Ambrosini intervened, Honourable Members. Then I will advise you to write down so that when the other texts come as option one and option two, you don't complain where this comes from. Because some of the instructions that you give, sometimes you complain about it. So Ms. Boyce, a simple what's name plus various options regarding looking at different pieces of legislation.
Opening that just on what the Honourable JJ said about the reasonable requirement, which is a limitation. Now, PIA uses words such as render such assistance as is necessary, which is they're not a limitation. That's possibly also that one can use the words there. That's not a limitation, and that's a requirement, as is necessary. So that is also a possibility, Chair.
The PIA is another option. Option three, thank you. We're still on page 10. Can we go to the next clause? Agreement with what we just said, then we don't need to look at this new clause, is it? I'm on page 11. What clause are you referring to, Honourable Member? Yes, Honourable Jeffries.
No, I wanted to suggest that it looks better if it is the new clause. I mean, it's a pity, okay, the whatever number XX we are now. But anyway, the previous clause is functions of the review panel, of the classification review panel. That deals with the functions correctly. It's not particularly good to go and put in stuff about staff. So it makes sense then having, as is in the alternate on page 11, the or new clause, that you have a clause dealing with appointment of staff, which is then what is there. And then I think taking Mr. Lander's point on board, that clause then consists of two sections, the number one and number three here. But I don't think you can, if you go the other way, the appointment of staff is sort of buried in a clause on the functions of the classification committee where it doesn't belong.
The honourable members following that? The O is removed. This is a new clause is removed. There's a new heading now, appointment of staff. Paragraph 1. And what is it? Paragraph 3. So 2 is to be removed, because that is going to come up later on. Let's first finalize what we're dealing with here. Bracket 2 under the heading appointment staff is to be deleted. And 3 will become 2. And we proceed then to constitution and appointment of the panel. We will understand that the Honorable Swart's point that we realign this paragraph once we have finalized the question of the panel. Constitution of the panel. Honourable members. There was the National Assembly story that we...
Yeah.
That we... Where is this difference now? Are we on page 12? Sub 2. Now, my understanding was that there was going to be after National Assembly in the old document, the words for approval was going to be added. We're on page 12. We bracket 2. It starts with a joint standing committee on intelligence must prepare a list of nominees with 3 more members than the number of appointees to be made and must submit a list of suitable candidates for approval by the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. Now, my understanding of what you had agreed to last night was that the thing should read, the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence must submit a list of suitable candidates to the National Assembly for approval. State law advisor has going to. Can we just hear from the state law advisor and then we get to the Honourable Jeffries?
Thank you, Chair. When I started with the presentation, I asked if I can maybe just make a further presentation on this particular clause after we've discussed with the parliamentary state law advisor the particular matter. It relates to the discussion we had last night on the joint rules of parliament and the particular section that deals with the recommendation. And we also looked at some other legislation dealing with a particular matter, so we would like to just have the opportunity to talk with the state law advisors from Parliament when we get back to this particular matter. So this is merely a proposal for consideration, but we would like the opportunity to address the committee on this particular clause after consultation. Thank you, Jeffries.
The Honourable Jeffries, then the Honourable Landers, then the Honourable...
Yeah, Chair, there's 2 issues. I think the state law advisor is talking about whether it can be done by one house and not both. My understanding would be this, I mean, the Inspector General is only National Assembly, and it's the JSCI that recommends to the House. So I think it's there. I mean, they can check up on it, but it's there. Obviously, if you decide that the NCOP must be involved in the appointment, then they're going to have to be involved in a whole lot of other things that I see are not there. But anyway, I think the Inspector General of Intelligence is the best comparison. Then just the 3 more names versus the 1.5. I think that what they've done is, I mean, it's 5 names, so therefore 1.5 is in fact 8. So I think that's where that has come from. But the problem is you may well have individual vacancies. okay? In which case you then have one vacancy which has to be filled. And in terms of the wording they've done here with three names rather than the 1.5, for one vacancy you have to submit four names as opposed to two. So I think that's where the problem is. It seems to me that's where the problem is coming, but I don't think it, well, it doesn't work, because it works fine if you're replacing the five in one go, but more often than not you end up having a single vacancy that you have to fill, and you now have to submit four names for that single vacancy.
The Honourable Launders, then the Honourable Mania, then the Honourable Babasini.
Jefferson, I agree with the Honourable Jeffrey. The problem is last night we reached an agreement with two. And the agreement with two was that where it said at least 1.5 times the number of members to be appointed, to be removed, period. We didn't speak about another three at all. So that didn't come into it. So I'm curious to know what persuaded the drafters that they should slip it in there. That's my difficulty, Jefferson.
Honourable Boyce, taking the law into your own hands.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, when we looked at the Constitution, and we looked also at the appointment of judicial officers by the J's Judicial Service Commission, and that's where we got the recommendation from. So it's just merely a suggestion. It's not that we slipped in something. It is appointed out, and we will make the necessary changes as reflected on the document, Chairperson. But we will ask this to the indulgence to consult with the law advisors, and we will make the necessary amendments thereafter. Thank you, Chair.
The Honourable Mania. Then is the Honourable Rossini.
I'd like to yield to the Honourable Smut.
I don't allow for substitution. If you could have persuaded.
Chair, that, sorry, that is not acceptable. The reason why we don't want 1.5 times the vacancies is that there must be no ministerial discretion in this case. There must be no presidential discretion in the case of the Chapter 9. It is Parliament who selects the exact number, the very people, in order to make sure that those, that selection, that appointment, is in the hands of Parliament and not the executive, because what does independence mean? It means independence from the executive. Therefore, under all of the Chapter 9s, Parliament selects the exact number of people it wants, votes upon them. Their names go to the President only for signing on the dotted line. It's a purely executive action, because we have no executive powers. Now, it is true that a number of committees, frequently ad hocs in this House, have developed the habit of giving more names for the President to pick and choose. That's unacceptable. It's directly contrary to the idea that Parliament chooses in order to establish independence. In some cases, even the statutes written for Chapter 9s and others have made this mistake. So I do concede to you that there is a variety of models. They are mistaken. The JSC is, please, not applicable, the provision for the other judges in 174. Our instruction to you was to take out the idea of 1.5, and that instruction stands, and it is regrettably a bit of freelancing for you to be looking at other models. The other new thing that has developed in the Assembly is the idea of making a list sufficiently long to fill future vacancies. That's what John has just referred to. And I forget what is the thing we appointed recently which had that? Was it that? Because there was a line and we had to take the vote twice. Now, that is also some sort of a newfangled thing invented by committees who appear to have decided that it's easier, more convenient, that you don't have to start the entire process again when a vacancy arises, as they tend to do frequently in the case of the SABC board. You know, it's a three-ring circus. But it is a bad idea. You shouldn't start developing your future vacancy fillers, and I don't think we should encourage such a practice. And we were quite clear, we want the exact number of people, and that's the instruction.
Honourable members, do we need further discussion on this thing, given that we had agreed now that the thing should read as I had set out? That is what we said last night. It was simple. The Joint Standing Committee, all that had to be added was the for approval and those deletions as I've set out. Isn't that... Is there anybody disagreeing with that, because that is what you agreed to last night? So can we proceed? Honourable Apresini, do you still want to be heard on this?
On sub 1, we said that would be by the National Assembly. If it is National Assembly and National Council of Province, should be by resolution of the National Assembly and National Council of Province, because Parliament per se doesn't adopt a resolution. But we agree that it would be National Assembly. And let me take it now so I won't speak again. And on sub 5, the suggestion from the Honourable Member.
Just one Honourable Member.
It's linguistic. Well, just to bring the must-have up there rather than repeating it.
Honourable Members, we are finished with bracket 2.
It says the classification, and that's our fault. The classification review panel consists of 5 members appointed by the minister upon the approval by Parliament by resolution according to the following principle. And we should rather either follow 193 of the Constitution or say classification review panel consists of 5 members appointed by the minister upon the recommendation of Parliament by resolution according to the following principles, if you want. But it's still a little bit clumsy. If you want to use the constitutional language, you say on the advice of Parliament or on the advice of the National Assembly. But in some statutes, we do say on the recommendation of. Perhaps the easiest is to follow 193.
Dix. Now, we have been using approval. I don't know. No. Honourable Members, a simple matter. Approval, recommended. Recommendation or approval? Or advice. It's not...
The approval is subsequent. The chairman?
I mean, if you say approval, I mean, it follows. It must be a revolution. How else does Parliament approve things or... The National Assembly, you don't have to say that you have to vote on the thing.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Honourable.
Approval is subsequent. Recommendation is before, so on recommendation. But as I said a moment ago, yesterday we agreed that it would be by the National Assembly, not by Parliament. And again, if it is Parliament, if Parliament doesn't adopt resolutions, the two houses do. So if we want Parliament, we still need to break it as National Assembly and National Council of Province.
And the point. Can we get down to the point here? Approval. Approval. So what are you proposing? Approval or recommendation?
Recommendation, because
yes,
the action of council, Parliament comes first.
Is this point support? One.
And point 2, it should be only the National Assembly.
Yes.
And if we want to have Parliament, it should be broken down in National Assembly and National Council of Province.
We agreed on National Assembly yesterday. Let's not take us back there. There is a recommendation that approval be replaced with a recommendation, and that the phrase be cleaned up to read properly. Can we, simple, we're dealing with semantics, we know what we want to say there, can we just take out approval and add recommendation? Honourable Swartz,
just ask the
law advisors to look at the procedure for the appointment of Chapter 9 institutions like the Public Protector, where it says the National Assembly must recommend persons, but then it adds nominated by a committee and approved by the Assembly by a resolution adopted with the supporting vote. The wording is there. Shall we use that? That's the wording in the Constitution. It sets out the steps. It's clear. We just want to make sure that the wording does not give the minister any discretion.
1934 says the president, on the recommendation of the National Assembly, must appoint blah, blah, blah.
Approval comes after an action. The minister takes an action, brings it to Parliament, and Parliament approves it. Here, Parliament takes its action first. So it's a recommendation, and then the minister takes action.
Honourable members, you seem to have agreed to a recommendation. Now, why do we want to debate this thing further? Can it be a recommendation? Can the state law advisor just flow that language so that it reads the way it should read and bring that thing back to us? Can we now? Can we get back to where we were now? Three. We're going down in the middle of the page 10, bracket 3. Council of Provinces was supposed to go out there. So there's nothing further. And then paragraph 4, that's fine.
10 years experience in what? As Mr. Swater said, I know the intention, and I know there was a sort of tighter wording before, which I also think was problematic, but the way it reads at the moment is admitted advocate or attorney with 10 years experience, they could be a conveyancer. I think it's loose, the 10 years. I don't think you want to define exactly what, but I suppose it's more that who's been in practice, who's been admitted for 10 years. I think that's the 10 years. Yeah, you've got admitted attorney or advocate who has been admitted as an attorney or advocate for at least 10 years. That, I think, is more what you're saying. But otherwise, if you have it as it is, 10 years experience in what?
Yeah, the Honourable Jeffrey is correct, but we faced this difficulty, I think, yesterday. And my understanding of what was debated yesterday is that we accept here that it is vague, and the selecting committee will look at what is relevant and what is not relevant. Could be a lecturer, could be a conveyancer, if it's somebody who seems to be other relevant experience. Where we requested a specific experience is under 5A, where one of the members must be constitutional law. And there was the debate, because otherwise the difficulty we have through you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Honorable Jeffrey, is how do we define what is the relevant experience in this specific field? What field of law? Would it be civil litigation, criminal law, corporate law? Effectively, anything could equally qualify and disqualify in a field of this nature.
You want to be heard, Honorable Swartz?
Let's just add the words in legal practice. I think the chairperson can be any lawyer that has 10 years legal practice experience. The specific person going lower down is the constitutional lawyer. And obviously during the interviews you would look to a person that's not just a conveyancer, although they could well qualify having 10 years experience. But the chairperson as such is a general legal practitioner. We have a specific constitutional expertise and law and security matters and knowledge and experience of archive related matters. Those are specifics. So if I understand Mr. Jeffries, he was concerned that you could say 10 years experience of selling cars as opposed to legal practices.
Honourable members, let me help you here. The original thinking, I think, where it emerged, in the circles in which it emerged, was to consider a judge to be the chair. But judge is not the only one that has got legal experience. There's advocates that have got legal experience. There's attorneys that have practiced for a long time. And the thinking was not to restrict the thing by saying a judge, because one ran the risk of the separation of powers problem, because you're dealing here with the executive situation. And that's where the thing was broadened out to include those legal people that might have equal qualifications or equal experience of that as a judge. Now, remember, you could be dealing with a judge that's only been on a bench for 2 years and might have been an advocate for 2-3 years, as opposed to an advocate that has been practicing for 10 years. That was the thinking. Now, are you capturing that here, or do you want to change the thought? Do you want to change the thinking on the matter? Because what you really want is an experienced person that people are going to respect, the panel of members are going to respect. You can't have your constitutional lawyer sitting, or your person that is experienced in constitutional law, more experienced than your chair. I think this body was meant to get the respectability from the status of the chair. It was meant to be an experienced person, experienced in law, and it didn't necessarily have to be a judge. Now, the point is taken that you might land up with a conveyancer here, and that 10 years conveyancer in, you might not be an appropriate person. So can we just fix the words then to capture what we want? That's all.
It sounds as what you mean is legal experience. So then should it not be 10 years legal experience?
So, honourable members, it seems that what we need to add after years is legal. Can we proceed then, honourable members? At least one member must. There was a complaint that repetition was not good in law. The. Yeah. So 5 is covered.
I spoke on that point, plus I thought we agree on 5A. To eliminate the word V before law.
Can't we just say expertise in constitutional law? Because that's really what we mean. And I don't know why we're calling it.
What we agreed, honourable members, and I'm not going to allow you to get out of that agreement, was that the word there be deleted. Yes, honourable chair.
The master even needs to go up.
Chair, I hope I'm not taking back anything or what you discussed, but it's basically what I would classify as the judge and simang IEC clause. You do cover it later under meetings of the board. You had a clause in there which is a rather long one which you've taken out and you've just provided that any decision valid if the quorum is present. But I'm not sure whether that's enough and whether or not under this section you're dealing with there should be a clause to the effect that a vacancy in any of these sections shall not invalidate, does not mean the board is not properly constituted. So we avoid the situation where you've got a vacancy in one of these three things and there's then confusion as to whether the board is properly constituted. The intention, I think, with all the bodies that we're setting up, where we're setting up categories, that when those boards are created, those categories are filled. Obviously, if there's a vacancy, it's filled as soon as reasonably possible. But a vacancy doesn't mean that it can't function. So where the Act says one must, at least one member, must have expert in the Constitution, and that member resigns or passes away. So it's just that invalidation thing. I see it. They've tried to deal with it later, but I don't think it's adequate. And I'd really appeal that you, the technical point, it doesn't mean, Ms. Van Beek's going out, it doesn't mean 3 days of deliberations. clause that provides that provided there's a vacancy must be filled as soon as reasonably possible, but it shall not invalidate the work of the board.
Agreed.
Those aspects you're raising, Uncle Jeffries, was discussed last night. I disagree with you, it was discussed. Perhaps the recommendation that the Honourable Jeffries is giving was not on the table, but I specifically asked you, what is the situation if your legal expert, your constitutional law expert is not there? Is this decision valid? And this is the thing that the Honourable Jeffries is raising now. But we'll get there, okay? So we're on 5 and there goes in, and then we go to the 5 sub A, and then those things are all correct because at least one member was to be taken out so that the repetition is not there. So A is fine, B is fine. Yes. But if you look at page 12 of your documents, it's been here. And then we're looking at B, must have knowledge, that's right. Must have knowledge and experience. That has been added, is that correct? Qualification, which is at the bottom of page 11. A person may not be appointed as a member of the panel. I'm right over to page 13 now. Citizen, there was no problem with that. Resident, we said permanently should be deleted. So there's no problem with that. C. We wanted it to be aligned with the Constitution, section 47(1)(a) of the Constitution. Am I correct?
Yes.
So is this now, is C reading appointed by or is in the service of the state and receives remuneration for that appointment or service? Is that correct?
Yes.
Then we go to D. There was no problem with D. And then we go to E. I see no problem with E. Belong to a political party or one of these movements, then you're out. F, you're insolvent. What about those people that belong to companies that went, that were liquidated, those directors? There's a discrimination against the insolvent and the director whose company was sorry, I didn't mean to talk on that point. Okay. G, there was a problem with your mad people. You were not happy that the mad people were properly... Okay. Has been declared to be of unsound mind by a court of the Republic. So you're not worried if he's declared mad in Zimbabwe? Must be mad in the Republic. Okay, then he goes to prison and he doesn't get a fine or option of a fine. Is that properly captured? This thing where we were asked to align. bind this thing to the Constitution, isn't it?
Mr. Chairman?
Can I get the Honorable Ebrasinifers and then the Honorable Swartz?
Okay, I'm sure Steve is going to say the same thing later. Now, this is the opposite of what Faki was saying. These were disqualified also before 94 were convicted. These are disqualification. So the prior should be after.
But there is a... Do you want to look at the options?
No, I mean, okay, the first option has got this problem. The second option has got the same problem. The third option would work. They also would not work. I mean, I think it had been put up the other way around.
The honourable members following the discussion. The discussion is on H. We're on H, and the wording in the original was has been sentenced to imprisonment without the option of a fine. We flagged it. We said, let's see if we can't align this with what the Constitution provides for members of Parliament. So if you look at page 13, you'll see there are a number of options trying to cover that. There's a number of H's and it goes right over to page 14. Honourable Landers.
Chair, I think the Honourable Faki Mentor expressed her concerns more than adequately last night. So we were faced with the difficulty of those people who had conducted certain actions in pursuance of political objectives. But at the same time, you had people who had genuinely committed ordinary murders, etc. And we didn't want them also to get into the mix. So if you turn and look at page 14, ignore under option 2 the words Architectural Profession Act, because I think that shouldn't be there. But where it reads, has been convicted of an offense in the Republic other than an offense committed prior to 27 April 1994 associated with political objectives and was sentenced. That seems to achieve seems to address the concerns raised by the Honourable Faki Mentor. The other options don't.
Are you agreeing to this, Honourable Dean Smuts?
Yeah, all you need to do is the Constitution. I mean, these are pretty standard things.
There's an agreement moving around here.
No, the third is fine.
Okay. The one on page 14.
Yeah, it's fine. But you needn't even have done that stuff with the prior to 94. You could just do the Constitution.
So this becomes the H and the other H is removed. If I might just ask the state law advisor, have you checked up whether there's been any challenge on this thing? Because I see you saying it comes from the Architectural Professional Act.
Chairperson, we are not aware of any challenge to this, but we can go and verify. But as we drafted this, we didn't pick up any challenge to it as yet. So we'll just verify the information, but this was a formulation, as you can see.
Honourable Jeffries.
Also, could they check? I mean, my recollection is the cutoff for amnesty wasn't 27 April, but 10th of May. But that was the cutoff for amnesty. So technically, you could have somebody who committed a crime after 27th of April, like 9th of May, get amnesty from the TRC, and all nice and clean, and they now can't be here. So just if they can check on that. But the amnesty expansion, the cutoff for an amnesty in terms of the TRC was an act committed before the 10th of May, the date of the inauguration of the first democratically elected president.
Can we have the state law advisor just check and advise us on that. Honourable members, for fear that you might ridicule me soon, I don't want your tea to get any colder than it has got. And so I'm going to adjourn. It is now 11:45. We shall reconvene at 12:05. We stand adjourned then till 12:05.
One member with knowledge of the Constitution. And then the same member can have knowledge of Constitution.
Okay, so
and he can have knowledge of art.
Right.
So these four members,
yeah,
you don't have any of this knowledge.
Ah, I hear you.
So that could be a problem.
That could be a problem. Okay.
should read it at least three separate members, one or two at least. Sure.
Right now, this
group stuff.
This is like a big deal.
Well, I mean, it's not a big deal. I've just been out of cabinet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I'm going through records trying to find proof of what party said that they would produce financial records to the public. So I'm ready to maintain.
Right.
None of the projects seem that appealing. I mean, I don't want to do the whole energy thing.
Yeah.
Gary is pushing quite strong. As much respect to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess before he came, they had like a forum about that. And, yeah, they were getting ready to launch the campaign. And I found it interesting. But more so from the perspective of just the process, not so much the issue or the fact. I mean, like, I was just, like, intrigued by, like, okay, here's an issue, here's how you want to go about some sort of advocacy type of thing, you know, and they brought a bunch of different people from different fields, but, yeah, just the content of it. So.
I mean, it's a bit of, there seems to be no riveting thing.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I mean, this is riveting.
Right.
It's going to have a huge long-term effect.
Mm-hmm.
So I just try to jump on the things that I think will...
Oh, I mean, same here. I mean, once I found out I was for sure going to come, you know, be in Cape Town for the summer, or winter, I was, you know, started keeping up on, you know, trying to get a feel for the domestic situation here. And this, immediately I was like, okay, this is a big deal. This is going to be, you know, while I'm here, this is going to be... You know, just the issue that we talk about. So I kind of pushed for it, you know, with PMG particularly. And that allowed me to do it. It's nice of them to give me this, my first assignment, you know.
But yeah, I mean, there's really nothing that bad about it. And then, Gary's trying to start a new project where they do the indexing of democracy. But I don't think that indexing is very useful for limitless government. And look at the whole Greece thing, indexing affected the whole European Union, so they're considering kicking it out, and that's kind of against the whole concept of
democracy.
I mean, I think it's good for educational institutes, but definitely not.
No, I mean, I'd agree. So.
There's no point. How can you say this government is better? But yeah, so I mean, there's nothing great. I'm just kind of posting something.
Nonetheless, it's cool to be here.
No, I mean, this is cool.
Yeah,
so if I could write more, do something with it. At the moment, I'm just kind of
compiling information.
But what did you do for you, Darcy?
I mean, you know, I was only there for 3 weeks, so, you know, I couldn't, it's not like I could say, okay, like, hey, this is a big project that I'd like to be involved with, you know. The things I did do were, I wrote, I guess they produced, like, country briefings for the CIDO program, S-I-T-O, CIDO, CIDO. You know, Brian, that's, I guess he's in charge of that there. they produced like these annual, like, just like briefings on different states, and so he had me working on for South Africa. So basically, it was pretty much just like, okay, you know, like very general information, but it was cool that I wrote it, like,
yeah.
You know, and obviously we edited, but generally speaking, it's, you know, my words and my compilation, so that was neat. And it was a small thing, but it was cool. But then, like, I did some research also for project funds done on basically, like, mineral resources in Zimbabwe, and, like, particularly focusing on China's involvement in trying to locate, like, what you know, Chinese companies that have invested in and deals with the government there. And, I mean, it was cool. I mean, it does, there's definitely something there that and it sort of opened my mind to, like, this, you know, this sort of new thing, new perspective of, you know, the case of, you know, China and, you know, looking to Africa to sort of get an advantage in terms of raw, you know, raw materials. And obviously the political aspects associated with that, which, you know, when it comes to, you know, Zimbabwe, certainly things are always a little, to say the least, you know.
But I mean, it's just a good, I mean, coming from an American perspective, to understand the relationship between the countries.
Yeah, I mean, already, like, yeah, I feel like I learned just from being here and hearing different, you know, perspectives and being involved in, you know, in a situation that's totally different. I mean, like, obviously, people who are, you know, in the States aren't really, yeah, the average person's not very concerned or knowledgeable about what goes on in Africa, you know, or other parts of the world, but, like, certainly not, you know, Africa. And it's good to, you know, who knows where down the road, and chances are it will be, you know, and I'm already sort of eager, you know, to put this piece and somehow stay involved and, you know, either sooner or later down the line, so.
So you're going to do law, though? Because is the end goal to become a judge?
It's such a hard question for me to answer, because I would say in terms of the law, I am passionate about constitutional law. Like, that's what gets me going. Like, but professionally, I have to consider this interest. And at least in the beginning, it's, you know, it's not quite as practical as maybe, you know, as, for example, I was at a personal injury negligence law firm, and what they do is pretty just going through the motions of, okay, you know, there's someone who was hurt, and now, you know, do they have a suit? Can we win it? Like, but, you know, it's a job. Like, it's a, you know, it's, you know, at least, you know, it's not the most riveting career. It's money. It's, you know. But I don't know, that, you know, I don't want that to motivate me solely, so I'll try to find some balance. You know, I think I'll be able to find a field of law that I think could...
Maybe you should focus on international, mainly U.S.
Yeah, I'm very, definitely interested in international. I would say about 50% chance I would do that, as it stands right now, like, because, yeah, it's sort of like, covers different, you know, you could put that to use in various different practices, but it's still very,
yeah,
you know, state government law, like, related. And I think certainly relevant, I mean, with the world the way it is, I mean, international law is increasingly important, you know.
Do you find that if you don't go on to one of the IBD law fraternities, is that a big thing?
I'm not going to, that's just,
yeah,
that's above me, and I can
just,
I can accept that.
Is it a big thing?
I think if you go to so let's say that's the first tier of schools, and then there's a second tier, you know, it's obviously a bit wider. I think if you do well there and graduate, you know, towards the top of your class, you know, during the summer, you know, get internships, or, you know, you get some real experience. I think you know, it would be fine, but that's going to require a lot of work. And for me, I mean, a big consideration is going to be the financial aspect too. So, like, I'm going to have to somehow compromise training in a school that is affordable, whether, you know, through, you know, money that I can get, and but still reputable. I feel like, okay, if I graduate here, I think I'll be in a good position.
But surely those people that graduated from the Ivy League can only go to corporate.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
not that, I mean, that's, I mean, you get the
odd case,
but go for online.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, generally,
yeah.
They're looking to graduate and be one of those, you know,
corporate lawyers,
you know,
flashy,
you know, big money. I mean, yeah, but they know what the jobs aren't really there. I mean, the big law firms, you know, they're not really hiring, right? You know, like it's just like everybody else, so. Again, if you are the cream of the crop, which some people are, and that's what you want to shoot for, yeah, you'll probably make it. But it's not like that dream is no longer like
accessible to all.
Yeah, exactly. So like again, I'll most definitely be applying when I get back in the fall. But whether I, you know, decide to go immediately or not, my scores are valid for 5 years, so it's not.
What's your GPA at the moment?
My GPA is 3.65, I believe.
That's pretty good. You can
yeah.
get into most
basically
schools with that.
Basically, they.
That's pretty
your,
much you only had a
your GPA. Yeah, essentially. They look at your GPA and then your LSAT, the law school admission test score. Like it's very objective. Like I'm sure I could look at a list of schools. If you gave me like median scores, it's okay. I would get in here. I wouldn't get in here. You know, like it's pretty clear cut.
I mean, the GPA of 3.65 is pretty good. Like,
NYU is it has a prestigious university. So I'm very pleased with myself. I mean, like it's just hard. My LSAT score is probably, I would say maybe slightly lower than the equivalent of what a 3.65 was. Like a 163, it's on a 180, 120 to 180 scale. The average was like 151, so it's well above average. But like you need like a 170 is like sort of the elite. Like that's where you're like you have your.
So you're below you should be getting as the GPA of 3.65.
Yeah, I mean they look at both of them and that'll maybe
bring it up
a bit. And like the 163 will be good for many schools, but not
sorry.
Really.
Quick question. This top position I got and this became two.
Yeah, so wait, let's check on my copy, because I don't know why this dead Lord buys.
Me.
So this takes out, and then this follows after this. And then, yeah, this is.
So that's one, okay.
And then this is the new option, I think. This is deleted from that.
This is deleted and taken to page 15.
I think it's just deleted. Because there's a.
It's the same as the clause 5 or.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
they just removed
it. It's because clause
15 is covered.
Here they're going to make this.
Okay.
Members
yeah.
and staff,
okay.
and that will cover both. Got it. Otherwise, what other changes? Oh, they changed the wording now, and this is not going to be the Parliament, the National. They've deleted the various opinions as well.
Oh, yes, the free language. Yeah.
For the provinces might be deleted.
Yeah, this is where the state law authority needs to go to some council.
Yeah, that's right, the inflation mark.
Okay.
Otherwise, I think we're pretty much the same.
Okay.
It appears vacancies that they'll be fulfilled within a suitable time as to not object the control. Not object, but prevent.
Mm-hmm.
Not to.
So that will come under which
one? That will come on later, they've been added later. No, I mean, this is just going to come in somewhere else. I think it's in 43 or something.
Oh, okay.
I'm guessing they're about to approve this.
Yeah.
I'm considering. I still want to finish. Oh, I still have to finish my undergraduate degree, and then I want to get a master's in sociology. Because I've been thinking more and more about going to Ben and doing an LAB.
Yeah, I mean, there's no rush. I mean, you know, like it's sort of something that you can think about and say, okay, you know, whatever. 3 years from now, I'll see where I'm at. If I'm liking what I'm doing, or if I think it could be worthwhile. It's a prestige. Like, you know, no matter where in the world you get it. That degree is prestigious, and you normally can do a lot with it. But you gotta want it for the right reasons.
But this is a lot of time that I would have spent 5 years studying, and then going back in for 3 or 4 years, and then doing a master's in that, because you kind of need help.
I'm not rushing to get there.
But I'm sure it would be fun. But I think that law has definitely interesting. I mean, I didn't have any interest in it until I think been sitting on the committee.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I thought it was wrong.
If I remember correctly, did you say you were, I know you have like various concentrations, did you say you were doing something like Islamic school?
I just did a course during my summer. I did a summer school course for Orientalism.
Specifically in
It was formed in post 9/11 era,
in like in America or globally, like in the West.
In the West, right? How we perceive the Oriental
No, that's really interesting. I would love to stay off of that myself. I would definitely think of it. Did you talk at all about the mosque near Ground Zero?
Yeah.
A year ago, that was a big deal. Now it's cooled down. But
we had a professor from Duke, this is hardcore Islamic physics, from Howard University, Duke,
and that word is. The passion that you get involved in it, obviously, especially from the side of from the Islamophobic, if you want to say that, like it's, you know, and I'm a New Yorker, so like 9/11 is one of them, but like still, I mean, you have to
rectify it.
Exactly, like the way they go about things, and
honorable members, we are now back in session. Can somebody remind me where we stopped? 27th of April. Yes, sir. Yeah.
I just want a guarantee. We were given a timetable on our first day that we're finishing at 5. So there are other things that one has to do. So we want to know, I've forfeited all the time like all the other members here. I'm prepared to sleep here, but at least we need to know whether it's still according to the timetable that we're finishing at 5 or not. Secondly, the pace we're moving. If we're working on until Saturday, I don't mind. I've agreed internally in myself. But as members, can we really, really check ourselves to say, are we satisfied? Are we doing the right job by moving so slow? And if people are asking questions that they are introducing new topics here, let it be clear that it's a new topic and we cannot be moving foreign to sideways. And let's do one thing and let's finish.
Honorable Fisher. Yesterday we had a meeting that went on and on late. Everybody was satisfied with it. We had a very good discussion. Now, usually weekends are inconvenient. Work, many things. Now, why not extend these meetings on these days, let's say until Thursday, move up to 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock? I think there would be no problem. Then we knock off Friday. Honorable members, on Monday, my understanding was that there was a firm agreement here, save for the situation that Justice Committee was facing, that we would sit to 9 o'clock every night. So I don't know why we're revisiting that thing now. Notwithstanding that the program, I drew your attention specifically to the program that was before you, and it was on the basis that the program was going to be amended, and that is in fact what took place in the meeting on Monday, if I were to remind you. It was amended. I subsequently informed the staff to make the necessary arrangements for the transport. You will recall, I also said to you, if you need transport, would you please let the secretary know, and also the question of food has been made. That arrangements have been made, so I don't know. I think you're merely repeating what we had agreed to, Honourable Member. Honourable Landers and Honourable Conway.
Chair, while we're on this, I had planned to speak to you informally, but I didn't speak to you informally yesterday. We've consulted, some of us who serve on the Justice Portfolio Committee, and we've agreed that even if the court hands down its judgment tomorrow, we will meet on Saturday, virtually the whole day, and again on Monday. And we do that mindful of the pressures on this ad hoc committee. And we agreed amongst ourselves that there wouldn't be any need for us to meet on Friday, because if the court hands down its judgment, you need the time and the space to read through it carefully and ascertain just what it is it says. And so we've decided we won't meet on Friday as justice, but we will meet on Saturday, and then again on Monday morning, with the view to debating the bill on Tuesday. The difficulty we face, Chair, is if the court doesn't hand down its judgment. But that's something else which has nothing to do with this ad hoc committee. I just thought I should inform you formally of that, Chairperson.
Honourable Fundray.
Chairperson, now I think the issue is not how late we sit or not sit. I think everybody on Monday, as you quite rightly said, we said that we agreed let's sit as long as it's necessary to do so. But I think the issue is that we're really making very slow progress. I mean, it took us 2 hours to go over work that we've agreed on yesterday. And we're not even done yet. And I really think what we need to do is to check ourselves in terms of the debate and whether we're really making a contribution to change and correct, that's one thing, or whether we're just speaking for the sake of speaking. Please, and I would urge you, Chair, as Chair, to control us in that way, that we actually move forward and that we move at a quicker pace, please.
Our powers have been extended on our members. Is there any objection to my powers to be exercising those extra powers of curtailing you if you are necessary, raising matters that have been discussed. Honourable members, I have been trying to move. So can you remind me where we were so that we can move? That's going to be added into H.
Yes, yes.
And the present H in the original, not in one of the alternatives, will be is going to be removed.
Yes.
So we add option 2. And then all the other options are deleted, and now I am on page 14. Aye. There's no problem there.
No.
Vacation has been changed to removal of office. There's no problem there, I see. Adoption by the National Assembly of a resolution calling for that member's removal. As a member of the after removal you should just move on as a member of the panel. Not from the panel, as a member of the panel. Am I correct, honourable members?
Yes.
The rest of the page, I am informed, is correct. I'm going over to page 15. The member ceases to be a member. Become disqualified in terms of this of the other section where you become a member. So that will be inserted once we have that clarification.
You did not forget also the vacant sections as well, because you might be disqualified for your vacant lapsing as well.
Add D or your vetting certificate is withdrawn. Are you satisfied, Honourable Swart, that it's covered in C? The middle of page sub 4, there's the two in brackets there, which are going to be removed. And then this decision of the panel binds an organ of state. Is that where you want to add the Jefferies clause?
Mr. Chairman, my suggestion is that you add it at the end of four. Any decision taken by the classification review panel is valid if the required quorum is present on the, at that meeting, comma, notwithstanding any vacancy or provided that no vacancy will.
Where are you reading?
Reading from the end of form.
By Honourable Jeffries was a vacancy in any of these sections does not mean that the board is not properly constituted. Now we need to tie that in with Dr. Ambassini's suggestion. Notwithstanding, I'm just trying to think it through, notwithstanding that a vacancy in any of these sections, notwithstanding a vacancy arising in any of the sections.
Notwithstanding a vacancy. If you want to be even clear, notwithstanding any vacancy.
Okay. The state law advisor, you know what is required there. You don't want the decision to be invalid because your constitutional law expert is not there. Are we on bracket one now? Classification review panel may confirm. Very set aside. And instruct head. Oh, that's right, isn't it? Is there anything wrong on this page?
Of the appeals by the honourable members, I'd like to address you on what is sub four there, Chairperson.
Sub four, in the middle of the page.
Yes. Chair, we say that the panel may confirm, vary, set aside any decision taken by the head of an organ of state. That's in one. In the new two, it says review panel must, before reaching a decision, afford the head of an organ of state. And then under four, it says a decision of the panel binds an organ of state. There's no consistency. It should read the head of the organ of state. That's the first point. The second point I want to make, Chairperson, is that elsewhere in the bill, under 19, clause 19, we say the head of the organ of state can delegate his authority to classify. So is it then assumed, Chairperson, that if a decision of the classification review panel binds the head of the organ of state, it automatically also binds the person to whom the authority has been delegated? I'm just raising that as a question.
Surely not by the
Well, I need to be certain of that.
Honourable Ambassini wants to be heard.
Thank you. Okay. I for one would leave it as it is on the. Let's start from four. Binds the entire organ of state, not just the head of the head of the organ of state, because somebody else down the rank might not feel bound. The decision binds everyone. And actually, if it were to be amended, I would say binds any organ of state. The decision by itself will define its scope of application, because if it is, whatever the decision is, it's applicable to one subject matter, and that defines the scope of application. But in terms of its effect in binding everyone, as a court of law binds any a judgment of a court of law binds any organ of state, so should this decision. On 1 and 3, we need to have, and this requires a discussion that we haven't had, and this has got to do with 23, 24 and the appeals. And as we discuss this in the corridors, it emerges perhaps there are two different understandings how all this works, and these are the appeals. Technically, it's the organ of state who classifies, but it delegates.
not a decision of the organ of the head of the organ of state, but a decision of somebody else that is taken on appeal. Does this mean that one must first appeal it to the organ of state, to the head of the organ of state? The chief director classifies. Okay.
Why are we dealing with appeals?
Because I'm trying to understand
Okay.
I'm trying to understand the meaning of the issue, the meaning of the words head of organ of state in one. Because he can delegate. So I would like to take the head of organ of state out of one, a decision taken by an organ of state. Then who takes it is dealt with in other sections. So if we had to achieve the consistency that you are looking for, Honorable Landers, I would take out head of from one and I would keep four the way it is.
Chairperson, I don't want to deal with appeals.
Honorable Fambrick.
Chairperson, please. We're not talking about appeals now. The fact of the matter is, ultimately, it's the head of the organ of state that is responsible. Whether he delegates or not, he can't rid his responsibility. So please, can we just move on this point? Oh.
I thought we would need clarity on if we are correct in this regard, because I posed a question and then Mr. Ambrosini came in with the whole idea of appeals that he discussed outside in the corridors.
Yeah.
The appeal here only comes in when the head of organ of state disagrees with the panel, and then he goes to court. So I'm not sure what it is Mr. Mdesini was
saying. Let me clarify. Don't dismiss my point. I mean, the sense of frustration I think your perception.
Three mics on now.
Can I clarify? Here we have an expression that says, set aside any decision taken by an organ of state.
There's a point of order, Honorable Member. Okay.
Okay. I'm trying to raise the point of order.
I haven't even ruled on the point of order. I'm going to rule on that point of order now. The point of order is well taken. We are not discussing appeals. But allow me to clarify what the Honourable Member is saying.
Can I not clarify it myself?
No. I'm talking now.
Well,
sub 4 says the organ of state is now bound by the decision. I don't think there's anything wrong. We don't have to say the head is the head. Once the decision is taken, that organ of state is bound by that decision, and I think it should stay. And I think when you're dealing with the process, the procedure, it's quite correct that it's the head. You can't deal with the organ of state, you're dealing with the head. But ultimately, when the decision is taken, the organ of state is bound by that. Now, I don't think it requires any further debate because this is so clear.
My point is different, and allow me to make it. You cannot speak on my behalf because otherwise I leave and you can sit here and speak for me.
I don't appreciate you being rude, and I didn't give you permission.
No, I know. I mean, I'm trying to make a point.
But I didn't give you permission to talk.
Okay, then
you ask me, then I give you permission to talk.
Okay, can I finish?
You want permission to talk?
I would like to finish.
Put up your hand.
I would like permission to finish what I started and then I was interrupted. May I? Thank you. The point I try to raise in good faith, you have number one, decision taken by the organ of state. In the preceding section, you have the power to delegate the taking of those decisions. We all know that, in fact, the power of classifying goes all the way down to the guy who actually creates the document or handles the information. He is the one who makes the decision in his name and not in the name of the Director General by virtue of a delegation. It will be a Chief Director, a Director, a Deputy Director. Here is where the inconsistency is.
Honourable Members.
to raise a new point about the section dealing with decisions of the classification review panel. I'm a little bit concerned if you look in 1 and 2 that the operative word is the classification review panel may confirm, vary, or set aside any classification decision. The operative word being their classification decision, which is carried through into 2. Is that not perhaps too narrow? Because in practice it would seem to me that the classification review panel will not just be dealing with classification decisions, but it's much more likely to be dealing with processes and decisions relating to classification, systemic problems. And it would seem to me that this wording is perhaps a little bit narrow. Perhaps we could find wording that would is a little bit broader and would encompass the functions of the review panel.
Classification procedures and decisions?
Something like that.
Honourable members, it seems you no longer agree with your words. What is it that you are proposing, Honourable? Have you got a proposal?
I mean, perhaps we could try something would be the classification review panel may confirm, vary, or set aside any classification procedures, practices, and decisions. Something that is a little bit broader and properly reflects what it is that the classification review panel is likely to actually do.
Honorable Abrasini.
In terms of this bill, the entity which classifies is the classification authority. In terms of the definition, classification authority means the entity or person authorized to classify state information and includes A, head of an organ of state, or B, any official to whom the authority to classify state information has been delegated in writing by head of an organ of state. So what the information that is the decision that the panel is reviewing is the decision of the classification authority as defined in the definition section.
Can I get a comment from the state law advisors?
Chairperson, I'm just not sure how the panel would review a practice or a policy or because to review something you need a decision to come to you. You'd need the reasons for that decision. Now, to review a practice, I don't know how you'd go about doing that, Chairperson.
Honourable Maine.
Chair, perhaps just let's think this through practically. As a result of a random sample, it comes to the attention of the panel that in a particular organ of state, there is evidence of, for example, overclassification, which is a systemic problem. Presumably then, the classification review panel would have to make recommendations or insist that that systemic problem be remedied. And it would seem to me that the wording in the current draft is perhaps a little bit narrow. It's not a major point. Well, it is a major point, but it can easily be remedied.
State law advisor. State law advisor.
Yes, Chairperson. What we've looked at now is looking at the wording, and we are just of the opinion that maybe we need to consider procedures, but still, if you do a review of a procedure, you're still stuck with the words. You need to confine it to a decision because it's actually a decision taken by that particular body or the head of the organ of state, and it will implement certain policies or it will implement certain procedures to come to that decision. So that is why we rather want to use the word decision than practices or procedures. Thank you.
There is a request from staff of the ministry's office to be heard. Is there any objections? Dennis Grummer been heard? He has raised his hands. He's asked to be heard. Is there any objections on the committee that he be heard? Mr. Grummer and then Mr. Long.
Chairperson, thank you. I thought, Chairperson, I should just request a point of information to help clarify how this would work in reality. If the request would come in, you would then be confronted with going to the file. That file will have particular information. You would then look, for example, in the case of the issue of the process, the first part, which is raised in the bill, is that there must be the creation of a filing and record keeping system, which is that part that refers to integral file block, file series, and those kinds of things. That is the macro. So when the review committee comes to do the review, it will find that there is a system that has been put in place. It will check if it is in keeping with the spirit of the bill. But it will, that system actually is governed by a number of records which go with the signature of the Director General. So at the end of the day, even if it is a system, there is a directive which is signed by the Director General. It is that the committee would then consult and check, has it been done in the manner in which it is provided for? That would be step one. Step two would then be to say, in the Act, we've got three parts of the Act. Part one is information that must not be classified. Have we ticked on that block that the information that is classified does not pass any of those things that must not be classified? If it does, then you find that the decision to classify was wrong, because the first box that you must tick is information that should not be classified. So you don't proceed to the next step. You make a finding immediately there, because your first step has actually not been complied with. Then you go to step two. Step two says there are conditions for classification. Then you will check if it meets the conditions for classification. If it does not meet the conditions for classification, again, you make a tick, you make a finding that the conditions have not been complied with. Now, you don't even have to look at the level of classification. You could do that as the next step if you also want to check a further infraction. But when you look at the conditions and find that they've not been complied with, then there's an erroneous classification. You move to step three. If the conditions are fulfilled, then the next step is to decide the level. Should it be confidential, secret, or top secret? There you look at the thresholds and the tests that must be applied. Now, in each of those things, for you to be able to review, you have to check the decision. So I've been long chairperson just to clarify that. But in each of these things, the word, the operative thing that you have to look at is the decision. If it is the system, there is a system, a decision that is taken by the general to put in place the system. If it is about non-compliance with the conditions for classification, there would also be decisions taken by the classifier that would not be in conformity with the process that has been put in place. Thank you.
Honourable Landis, and then the Honourable Mania.
I don't think David's proposal will help us, Chairperson. I think what is here is more than sufficient to take us to where we want to go.
Honourable Mania.
Chair, perhaps the remedy would be quite simple if we amended the wording to just say any decision related to classification or declassification. I mean, that would cover everything in my view and would be a simple...
Is a third link to that thing on the Romania? Is also reclassification? You can go up, you can go down, or you can come totally out. That's declassification. You come totally out of the system. But you might remain in the system by going up and down. That's a reclassification. I'm not sure whether people are happy to... it seems like they want to hold you to the agreement. Honourable members, are you getting it out of your agreement now? To add this... Can I proceed, honourable members? Honourable Mania, are you happy with that? We shall record that the Honourable Mania is not happy.
And perhaps at a later stage when we're doing a different kind of final run through the bill, we may offer a separate clause. Okay. But that's fine. We're not doing that.
Okay. Honourable members, now where am I? I'm on bracket 4. We're going to report now. There's no problem there as I see it. Is there anything that needs to be raised there? That all seems to be in taking out the minister, taking out the minister, taking out the minister, and then I go over to 17. There seems to be nothing there.
Again, I don't mean to start a new controversy. But under 4 on page 17, the chairperson of the review panel must publish any annual report. It's either an annual report or any other report. Why do we have any annual report? It should read, must publish the annual report and any other report.
I thought we were dealing with two separate things here. It was the annual report that had to be published, not any hour. So any, I think the word any, published any should be changed to the. Because that's really where you're going to learn about everything.
Listen, it says that the review panel must, through the JSCI, submit any other report that Parliament may require. So why are we sending it to Parliament if it's not going to be published?
Honourable Fundray.
The confusion is here, the two issues. The one is the reporting to the JSCI, which will not be open information other than for the JSCI. The annual report we have agreed upon is something that must be open. And in fact, prior in the legislation, it says that, you know, this is what must be done. So, in terms of the publishing year, we're talking definitely about the annual report that must be published. There's a certain amount that must be printed, and it must be available. I think that's the point that we're trying to get across here.
That was the point that we agreed upon.
There's just one thing. We certainly didn't agree in 5.3, in the new sub 3, to any reports going direct to the Joint Standing Committee in Africa House. Anything that comes to Parliament goes to Parliament and gets referred to you. You are an organ of Parliament. So the Classification Review Panel must, through the JSCI, I don't think so, submit any other report that Parliament may require. I don't think so. Maybe there's other reports.
Honourable Van Wyk.
Again, there's a difference for me because there is a difference. I think the Honourable Smuts is also, we're getting into detail that I don't think we either tired or whatever the case may be. But the fact of the matter is, the other reports will be requested by the JSCI. It won't be requested by Parliament necessarily. The tabling of reports will go to Parliament. That I agree with. And then it will be referred to the correct committee. But requests for reports would come through the JSCI, as far as I understand it. We can... Well, the JSCI surely is part of Parliament, but the... JSCI will be requesting this information. It's not Parliament requesting the information. It will be JSCI that requests reports. And who does the oversight on the review panel itself.
Give me the wording, Honourable Members, and I'll change it for you. What is the wording? The panel... The panel... can I hear that, Honourable Member? Further adjustment, have we got that? Simple. Very simple. No much two words to be added. Now I'm in a transition. Any is out on four. The last word in the first line. Any annual report should be changed to the annual report. Transition. Is Honourable Jeffries covered here? What was the Honourable Jeffries reminding us about? I just asked, wasn't there something that Honourable Jeffries... okay. So the transition period is in accordance with the instructions, Honourable Members. Can we then have a final draft? Yes, Honourable Mania.
In respect of the transitional arrangement, if I understood the Honourable Landers correctly last night, if you look at sub B, the agency must review and compile an audit report. My understanding was that the Honourable Landers thought that the review panel must conduct that review.
Honourable Landers, Honourable
Chair, the Honourable David Manion needs to read the whole clause. We're referring to defunct organs of state. No longer exist. Their DGs died 50 years ago. And so you have nowhere to refer this classified information. In that situation, we said last night, the agency undertakes that role.
Honourable Barassini.
Would it not be possible to pigeonhole this clause and consider it once we consider all the transitional arrangements? Because, see, I have a difficulty with some of the transitional arrangements. And this will fit into that discussion. There is a huge amount of information which has been classified out there. We are introducing a new principle of legality, of what can be and what cannot be classified. So certain things will meet that principle, other things will not meet that principle. We will need to discuss whether we're going to have a rule that pending the reclassification, everything which is classified, meeting or not meeting the new requirement, remains classified. Or this comes in immediately, and whatever is not in compliance with the law cannot be deemed classified. And the consequences are enormous. I can give you examples, but I don't know whether you want to entertain the discussion now, but there's a discussion against which this provision is to be read. So my plea is to pigeonhole this discussion until we deal with transitional arrangements, and then we look at them holistically rather than in a separate fashion.
Honourable Swatch.
Yeah, Chair, I think in effect that is what is going to happen. It's not as though we have really thrashed out at all even this aspect of the transitional arrangements, because the first question that arises for me after I've read subsidies is, and then what? But we'll do that when we do. I think we are compiling, do I understand correctly now,
slowly compiling what will be a consolidated version with a lot of stuff that we do now agree on. But questions will arise. I mean, that's in the nature of lawmaking, that new questions arise. You keep thinking about the thing. And I think the right moment for that will be a next stage of this proceeding, which we're not going to finish in plan this week. We're making a sort of a basic consolidated version.
Honourable members, yesterday, I think you should recall me saying where we find as we go through the bulk instances where we need to make allowance for transitional arrangements, it is better to raise it now and move it along with us, which is what the Honourable Abelsini is saying, so that we don't go through the bill and then when we get to the transitional arrangements then start to think what is it that we should be doing. At least it's fresh in our mind, we're capturing it, it will be moved along as we go along, we'll tag it with us if there is need for us to take into consideration something that needs to go into the transitional section of the bill. We'll capture it as best we can, and when we get to that section, we'll see how we're going to deal with it. We'll give it a holistic look then when we get to that section. Can that then be the principle on which we go forward on the... We're not going to get into deep discussions on the transitional section. On the Belanders.
Listen, I agree with you, and I don't have a problem with the proposal you've put before us. However, I would just ask that you look at whether we shouldn't say under transitional arrangement, right at the very outset, subject to Section 20. Clause 20 right now says very clearly, information may not remain classified for longer than a 20-year period, and then it says that unless the head of an organ of state, and then certain criteria must be fulfilled or satisfied. It's important that that comes in here, so that as you reminded us at some stage that the miss period, need to deal with that very carefully. We agree with you. But the period prior to MIS, we can leave that in the hands of the agency and they deal with it, provided that even they are aware that there is this provision in the law that anything classified 20 years and before then must be dealt with expeditiously.
Exactly, Honourable Anders, that subject to that you want to be added. But in the transition, you were referring to the transition.
Subject to Section 20. So we're going to do an audit, but then the stuff that was classified 50 years ago is made subject to what is in 20 here. And then you correctly reminded us, Chairman, that we need this transitional arrangement, particularly for that miss period, and we agree with you.
Honourable members, the review panel is now properly or almost properly constituted. You want to unconstitute, Honourable?
Chair, just to mention, unless I've missed something, what is not contained in the section dealing with this committee, with this panel, is the committee of parliament to which it's accountable. It may be useful to add a clause to say that it is accountable to a committee of parliament, that committee being the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence.
Absolutely right, Ruben.
Honourable Van Beek.
I don't disagree with that. I just want us to also make it still possible for the Committee on Police or Defence to be able to ask them to come and to brief them on the annual report and aspects of the annual report. I just don't want us to write it in such a way that it's restricted only to JSCR.
advisor, please. Can you get us a very neat clause there? That the panel shall be accountable to the JSCI and also include the other committees, other relevant committees, and just see how you're going to, given that the JSCI would, the accountability to the JSCI would be very specific. Can you bring us a, now will you bring us that thing on a separate page, please? Because if you bring it in the text, then people are going to find fault with the text again. You bring us that thing in a, on a single page, and then we'll figure out where we will fit it in. Now the panel is beginning to be properly, it's even going to report soon, and I think at this stage, barring the normal interventions, when we get back to it that we would entertain, we're not going to reconstitute this thing to consist of two members, one of which must be a judge and change this whole thing around. We have spent a lot of time on this thing, honorable members, and I would like to think that the time it was spent on this thing was well spent. I would not disagree that if there are issues that are clearly systemic that needs to be looked at, that we would deal with that at the appropriate time. But can we agree now that we're going to move on to clause 17 and that we would look at this panel only on the issues that we have referred to the state law advisor, so that we can give effect to the complaints that some of the members have raised, that we have been recycling information over and over. Now we're on clause 17.
Chairman.
Before we go on the lunch, can I get an understanding what it is in clause 17 that the honourable members have got?
So before you close, can I address you before you close?
Honourable Cabrestini, what is the problem?
No, you just summarized that we closed this discussion, which I'm fine with. I just want to record that I will try to address you again on the substitution of the heads of the organ of state with classifying authority, because it is wrong.
Honourable members, clause 17. We're going to go for lunch as soon as I get an indication where the debate is going to lie. Do you want to now go through? Do you want to go through this line again?
Where our main difficulty will lie, we mentioned it before, and that is that whole sections will have the effect, in fact, of diluting the classification criteria, simply because we are amalgamating two clauses. And there, we pointed to them once before. There are two big fat sections which will A, either dilute or B, cause confusion.
Do we have the solution? Honourable members, then we stand adjourned. It's 1 o'clock. We stand adjourned till 2.
Yeah, I think I got the gist of it. And looks like the recording went off. So, do you want me to keep this going? You have one.
No, I've got my
own. Okay, so I can.
Can you just be going through the same thing?